It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
We're getting closer and closer to the college football playoff. We got another poll out. Georgia still number one. Alabama still two. Notre Dame, Clemson still in the top four. But we'll be talking about most of those teams. We'll be talking about Notre Dame, Miami, Oklahoma, TCU, Iowa, Wisconsin. And of course, we'll also be talking about Georgia and Auburn coming up here on the University of Fish. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll get it started right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
We're now joined by Mark Weiser. Mark, who is Mark? He is the beat writer for the Athens Banner-Herald. And if he's in Athens, that must mean it's the Georgia Bulldogs. They're going to Jordan-Hare Stadium to take on the Auburn Tigers. Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you.
And when we look at Georgia, we haven't seen a lot of answers from them yet this season. We've seen them beat Notre Dame. Not real sure about the rest of the schedule, even though they've won every game on the schedule. Jake Fromm comes in to fill in for Jacob Eason after he gets hurt very early in the season. Doing really well. Not lighting up the scoreboard with his passing, but he's managing the game and making sure he gets the rock to Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. What have you seen from Jake Fromm to let you know that he can lead them against Auburn?
Well, I mean, he's already won for a true freshman. He's won in some tough environments. I mean, his first start was at Notre Dame, a national TV game on primetime television. He went to Tennessee, one of the biggest stadiums in college football, 100,000 plus, and won 41-0 there. He's not being asked to necessarily, I mean, they're not building a game plan around him, passing the ball to win every week. You don't need to do that when you have Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. But when they have to, move the chains, he's making clutch third down throws. He's very efficient. He's in the top 10 nationally in passing efficiency. And he really throws it what they call a catchable ball. His wide receivers puts it in play for them to make the catch. And they were actually putting a lot on him in the RPO, in the run-pass option game, where he's, reading the defenses and deciding whether to tuck the ball and run himself or to hand it off to make a throw. I guess I was talking more about the zone read with the tucking it. But in the run-pass option, he's whether to give it to Sony Michel or Nick Chubb or just turn it into a passing play. So there's a lot on his plate, more than you might expect for a team that's, down to the bottom in the SEC in passing offense.
Yeah, when you look at Chubb and Michelle, if the other wasn't on the team, you have a bona fide Heisman candidate right there because they'd have 1,600 yards by now. But with the two-back system, actually you've got three or four very good backs there at Georgia. Georgia always puts out good running backs. But talk about what those two have done to pretty much carry the load.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, depending on which game, I mean, you could also have DeAndre Swift is their third back, true freshman out of Philadelphia, and he's going to be their next, star running back when these two guys, Chubb and Michel, leave next year or after this season. Elijah Holyfield, Brian Herrien as well, the fourth and fifth backs. Those guys get first quarter work, in some games. So they are going deep, which is keeping Nick Chubb really fresh. I think before last week he didn't have more than 16 carries a game. Sony Michel against Florida was something like 6 carries for 130 yards, somewhere in that range. So these guys are very, they're taking advantage of their opportunities. They're fresh, and in November now, that really should pay off. If this Auburn game is a tight game, you'll see Chubb and Michel, obviously, in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line.
Now, you look at Georgia on defense. They're only giving up 11.7 points a game, but you're facing an offense in Auburn that very balanced, right at 230 yards passing a game, right at 230 yards rushing a game. They're averaging 37 points a game. What does Georgia have to do on defense to shut down the Tigers?
Well, Georgia's been very good against the run this year. And, with Auburn missing Cam Pettway, you wonder how much Kerryon Johnson can take if he's going to get worn down late in the game. They have to ride him. You know, I think Auburn's good to win the game. They're going to have to, have Georgia not crowd the box and, make them worry about the passing game. Georgia's been vulnerable. If you look at what areas that Georgia defense maybe can be, taken advantage of. I mean, Missouri hit a couple of deep ball touchdowns in the first half in their game. Even Vanderbilt, South Carolina last week had some success on third and long. So that's probably the one area where Georgia might be the most vulnerable is the pass defense. But no one's really been able to run the ball very well against Georgia. Florida had like 170 yards rushing, but that thing was already a blowout by the time they racked up a lot of those yards.
What's the feeling around Athens with the College Football Playoff Committee saying, hey, Georgia's the best team in the nation? Are the fans buying into that, or are they being a bit more cautiously optimistic?
Yeah, I mean, it's either Georgia or Alabama. Whether Georgia or Alabama is one or two, it's going to be decided, in Atlanta in the championship game, in the SEC title game. And if they're both undefeated, I think either of them has a good chance to make the playoffs with one loss, assuming that they don't get blown out in that game. So I don't think people really, obviously there's a lot of pride. Georgia being number one, it hadn't happened, in the AP or the coaches' poll since the beginning of the 2008 season, and that was short-lived. It was only for a week because Georgia got passed, even though they won that week. The fact that Georgia's 9-0 for the first time since 1982 and totally obviously in the hunt for the national title, in the second year under Kirby Smart, it's something to be celebrated around here.
It is. And Mark Weiser with the Athens Banner-Herald, we look forward to talking to you a little later in the season because the Bulldogs looking really good right now. Thanks for joining us this morning on the University of Fish.
Sure, sounds good. Thank you.
We're joined now by Mark Emmert of the Des Moines Register. Big game in the Big Ten. Iowa's already seen their state counterpart, Iowa State, knock off two of the big boys. They knocked off Oklahoma. They knocked off TCU. Iowa trying to do the same thing in back-to-back weeks. Knocked off Ohio State last week, and now they've got Wisconsin. But first, Mark, let's talk a little bit about that game last week with Ohio State. Did you see this in the Hawkeyes?
Certainly not the margin. I actually did predict a Hawkeye win, but I thought it would be a close game. They've the last five times they played a top-five team in Kinnick Stadium, they've won four of those. And the one they lost came down to the final play of the game when Penn State beat them earlier this year. So I thought they were capable. I thought Ohio State might be still having a little bit of a hangover from that Penn State win the week before, but I certainly didn't think they would win by 31 points. They just dominated Ohio State.
Now, I was watching multiple games Saturday afternoon as I kept turning my head towards the Iowa game. I was like going, really? They're seriously doing that? And yeah, I know Iowa made me wrong earlier this year because I knew about that top five streak that they'd had there at Kinnick Stadium, and I took Iowa to beat Penn State, and it was close. It was close, and they almost made me right, but I didn't even see last week coming. But this week is a whole different animal. You're going to Madison. You don't have the friendly confines with the pink locker rooms there for everybody to enjoy it at Iowa. But you're going up to Madison to take on Alex Hornibrook and the Wisconsin Badgers. And you really can't say Alex Hornibrook and them. You got to say Jonathan Taylor when you talk about the Badgers,
absolutely.
Don't you?
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. They seem like they always have these great running backs. I don't know how they get them every year. And he might be as good as they've ever had there, honestly, before it's all over. But he's been fantastic. Obviously, there's a little bit of rain in the forecast. Maybe some freezing rain, which I think will be a lot of fun if that happens with these two teams. So they're going to have to rely on that ground game because Hornibrook has been kind of shaky this year, I think, and now he's lost his top receiver for the season with an injury. So I expect a lot of running.
Yeah, I do. I do as well. So, what does Iowa have to do to stop Jonathan Taylor?
Well, they got to be much more sound in their assignments. I mean, they've given up some rushing yards this year, really to some teams you wouldn't expect. Illinois had some big plays against them a few weeks ago here, and they cleaned that up against Ohio State. Really did a good job. Actually, Ohio State only ran Dobbins six times, which was bizarre, one of the strange things in that upset win, but they kind of took that running game away, made him pass, and then intercepted Barrett four times. They got to do the same thing, I think. I think turnovers are the big key for Iowa. They got to force some turnovers there, and not commit any of their own in order to come out with a win.
Now, when you flip the field and Iowa has the ball, Nathan Stanley hadn't been lighting up the scoreboard or the stat sheet, but he's been very efficient, a 22-4 TD to interception ratio. What does he have to do to lead this offense against that Badger defense?
Well, they need to throw more on first down. That's one formula that they've seen lately that's worked for them. They threw 50% of their first downs against Ohio State, and that really keeps teams a little bit off balance. They were a little too predictable in the past, you know, running the ball on first down almost exclusively, and then they end up at the second and nine or second and 10 a lot of those times, and they're in a bad situation. So they need to keep that balance going. I think he really needs to keep relying on his tight ends. He's got two really, really good young tight ends in T.J. Hockenson and Noah Fant. They combined for four touchdowns last week, and those guys are they're just a load to handle. They're actually much better than Iowa's wide receivers are. So I think I look for him to kind of keep those guys involved in the pass game to set up the run. And then when they do that, then Akram Wadley, the tailback, is really good.
Wadley has been he is the leading rusher for Iowa this year. But let's talk a little bit about Noah Fant, because, like you said, he's a tight end, but he's got seven TDs this year. He's a great target for Stanley to have. So does the tight end have to come into play a lot this week for the Hawkeyes?
Yeah, I think really every week. And it's not just him. It's the fact that they got those two guys that both have 6 foot five. You know, last week, Ohio State, Fant caught like three passes early, and they started like double covering him with a safety, and that left Hockenson open, and then he got five catches and two touchdowns. So to try to stop both those guys is really, really a lot to ask of a college defense. I mean, that's something you just don't see in college, those kind of tight ends that are skilled, you know, really with basketball kind of skills. They get downfield and they get, you know, 20-yard gains. And I think, you know, Fant is the more talented of those two, the more highly talented, and he is really, really good. In fact, he's got seven touchdowns on only 23 catches. So he has a way of finding the end zone.
Well, I know last week Iowa picked up a whole lot of fans because, you know, they're wanting to see some chaos in the college football playoff poll, and you made it with Ohio State. I know they're looking for it again this week with Wisconsin. Got a lot of bandwagon fans for Iowa right now. Can they handle it?
You know, I think they can. I think it's, you know, the road team has won the last six games in this series, which is really, really stunning. I'm not sure that's going to continue. I really think Wisconsin is kind of a team with a mission this year, and they're getting things done every week. I think Wisconsin's going to win this one, but it'll be a close game. It always is with these two teams. And like I said, any turnover, any special teams, big play can really decide this thing, because the last two have been decided by 12 points total, and I think it's going to be that kind of a close game again with a lot of running and defense.
Well, Mark Emmert with the Des Moines Register, thank you for joining the University of Fish today.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Now, when we come back, we're going to have Oklahoma, TCU, also Notre Dame, Miami. And don't forget, Fish's Picks are coming up. The professor is going to continue teaching right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
We are joined once again. We talked to her last week, and you know what? She was so good, we thought we'd bring her back this week as well. Brooke Pryor with the Daily Oklahoman. TCU, Oklahoma this week. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State last week. We might have to skip next week since it's just Kansas. But Brooke Pryor, how you doing this morning?
Not too bad. It feels like it doesn't slow down around here, which I guess is a good thing.
That is a good thing, especially this time of year. Oklahoma now sitting number five in the college, well, actually still sitting at number five in the college football playoff poll. TCU, with all the havoc that happened last week, now up to number six. So number five, number six in Norman. I know they're trying to harken back to the days of the Texas Tech jumper round game. I saw you posting what song should be played for the crowd. It's going to take more than the crowd, though, this week, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, the crowd can play a huge part in it, as it can at any game, but the real game is going to be between the guys on the field, obviously, and the guy being Baker Mayfield. Again, I mean, it's every single week, and that's just the story of this season, is that for as many flaws as OU has as a team, specifically defensively, and there are some offensive flaws, too, with all the new guys, Baker Mayfield's been good enough to pull them through every week, and he's going to have to do the same thing this week.
Well, one thing we learned this week is that we already knew Oklahoma had one of the best tight ends in the nation. We just found out that his name was Rodney Anderson this week. Joey Galloway, once again, showing his college football acumen. I don't know how his pick of Baylor winning the Big 12 is going, but he called Rodney Anderson a tight end. Obviously, we know that it's not the tight end. That would, of course, be, and why am I having a brain fart here? Mark Andrews.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark Andrews, one of the best tight ends in the nation. Rodney Anderson, though, coming into his own, once again goes over 100 yards in Bedlam. But Bedlam, the story was there, Baker going for almost 600 yards. He is now probably firmly entrenched as the Heisman favorite, and every pundit around the nation is saying so. What's it going to take from Baker against what is arguably probably the best defense that he has seen all year?
You know, I think he's just got to have a solid performance. And the thing is with Baker, the last two times he's played TCU, he's only played in six quarters. The first time they played, he got knocked out in the first half with a concussion, so he wasn't able to finish that game. But, I mean, he's got around just under 500 yards of total offense and six touchdowns against TCU in the last 2 years. That's pretty good against a Gary Patterson team that has a really strong defense every single year. But in the last 2 years, or at least last year, Baker was kind of helped out with the emergence of D.D. Westbrook. This year, this time around, Marquise Brown, this short, speedy wide receiver, kind of had his coming out party against Oklahoma State. And I think that could really play into this weekend's game.
I know everybody is waiting to hear Gus Johnson go, Hollywood! Because Gus Johnson, who we know... And I didn't know you were doing this from the SBCA today, but that's
from the dog walk.
Yes, from the dog walk, but that's okay. But speaking of Marquise Brown, he's probably, you can never go by what the roster says he is. It says he's 5'11", 165. My guess is about 5'8 and a half and a buck 25. But
you know, that might even be generous.
Yeah, I mean he's, I've read stories on him all week long because everybody's been putting him out about how he was, you know, he was 2 weeks early. Mom thought she was going to possibly die during the pregnancy. And so, you know, the small size kind of comes into play. No one wanted this guy in D1 ball. Utah State did, but he, you know, was a late entrant because of his ACT scores. And then he goes to College of the Canyons or whatever it is out there in California, and then makes his way to Norman. He had some big schools he could have picked from, but he picked Norman, and I think Lincoln Riley's kind of happy about that, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, OU has, the last couple of years, they have taken chances on some junior college guys. You know, 2 years ago, they picked up D.D. Westbrook transferring in, and he obviously paid off big time last season. I think in Marquise Brown, they feel like they've got kind of a similar deal. I mean, Marquise Brown was not highly recruited, like you said, out of high school. He got to College of the Canyons after missing a semester of football, excuse me, to try to figure out what he was going to do, where he was going to go. And he gets to College of the Canyon, and College of the Canyons, and within 2 weeks, he's picking up, you know, lots of offers. His coach really wanted him to go to USC because his coach went to USC. It's close by College of the Canyons. But USC ends up pulling that scholarship offer because they just don't think he's going to be big enough. You know what? His coach got a text, his former JUCO coach got a text Sunday after the Bedlam game, and it said, doesn't it feel good to say I told you so, from a USC coach. So I think some of these coaches that didn't recruit him are having a little bit of remorse now, seeing what he's able to do, because it's not about how big you are now. It's about how fast you are, because it, you know, doesn't matter if you can run through guys who are trying to talk to you, but if you can move around them and streak past them, that's all you need to do in today's game.
And we've seen that all over the Big 12 for years. I mean, even going back to Wes Welker, you know, the Tyler Locketts, all the Locketts actually at Kansas State, and now, like you said, with Marquise Brown. But Marquise Brown doesn't get to play defense. Jordan Thomas, Oboe, and all of them get to. What's it going to take to shut down Kenny Hill?
You know, I think for OU, again, it's going to come in the secondary. Up front, they're pretty solid. They're getting Neville Gallimore back this week, which I think is going to be a huge boost. But it's going to be about the secondary. Again, every single week, this is the storyline. But this time they go into this game, don't know if Jordan Thomas is going to be available. Parnell Motley didn't play well last week. He gets benched. They're going to be without their starting safety, Will Johnson, for at least a half because of targeting. So they could end up having to rely on three true freshmen in Robert Barnes, Trey Norwood, and Trey Brown. And you kind of have to hope that these freshmen don't play like freshmen, because in a game this big, you need as many veterans and veteran-like play that you, as you can get.
Well, we won't get into the targeting call, which was a horrible call. Should have been an interception and all that. But that was last week. We're talking about this week. Now, TCU doesn't have, like, a dynamic runner, but Darius Anderson gets the job done. And so, like you said, Gallimore's going to be back this week. Obo's going to have to step up in run support as well, even though he's much more comfortable as a pass rusher. Are you worried at all about the running game of TCU?
I mean, I think you have to be, given how OU has handled the run game the last couple weeks. I mean, when teams stick with the run game is when OU kind of gets more off balance in their defense, you know, wondering what they're going to do. They weren't necessarily able to stop Justice Hill a week ago against Texas Tech. Same kind of thing when they're running back on that first series, I think went like 80 yards, just gashed them, you know, right off the bat. Same thing with Kansas State. If TCU can establish the run game early and not back away from it in the way that some of these other teams can, I think that could be a real key to success for the Horned Frogs.
I think so as well. Now, like I said, we probably won't talk next week because it's Kansas. But we do have the West Virginia game coming up. And, of course, if everything falls into place correctly, the Big 12 championship game coming up. Brooke Pryor with the Daily Oklahoman, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We're joined now by Eric Hansen of the South Bend Tribune. And you know, if he writes in South Bend, he's got to be covering Notre Dame football. We've got a renewal of Catholics versus convicts today. I mean, we've got Miami, Notre Dame. We're going to find out a little bit more about these two teams. We've seen Notre Dame with the close game against Georgia, and that's what Georgia's been hanging their hat on all year. Well, Miami's been kind of skating by, had a better game against Virginia Tech. Eric Hansen, how are you doing today, and what's the feeling around this Irish team right now?
I'm doing great, and I think the feeling around this Irish team is better than cautious optimism. I think that, you know, this is a fan base that went from wanting to run their coach out of town to kind of breaking their ankles, jumping on the bandwagon now. And I think it's not only the fact that the team is winning, it's how they're winning, that they have this big bruising offensive line, a running game, and a respectable defense. And I think that's kind of what they always wanted their Notre Dame teams to look like.
Well, and you talk about how the cautious optimism, because coming into the season, I talked to your cohort, Mike Varell. He was on the show with us, and we were talking about how Brian Kelly is on one of the hottest seats in the nation after going 4-8 last year. And then the turnaround this year, I can understand why people are breaking those ankles trying to jump on the bandwagon. You brought up the running game. You've got a Heisman contender. Every time that Notre Dame has someone that's doing good, the national spotlight tries to shine on him because of the national exposure of the team. But he's for real, isn't he?
He absolutely is. You know, he is a big kid. I mean, he's 6'2", 225. He runs kind of upright. He reminds me a little bit of Eric Dickerson style from way back in the day at SMU. But, you know, he's also got a lot of help. He averages around 140 yards a game. Didn't play much last week, but they're averaging over 300. So there's a lot of other people involved in the running game. But Josh Adams is definitely the alpha dog in that group.
Speaking of him playing not playing last week, how has he looked in practice this week? Is there any lingering effects of the performance last week?
You know, he's we talked to him yesterday. He's feeling really good. What happened with him? He had a lot of demands away from the field, and especially in his classroom. He had two or three nights, he said, where he got 2 or 3 hours of sleep because of projects or tests, and just didn't take care of his body very well. And he got to the game on Saturday and had a pretty bad headache, took a hit to the helmet and made the headache worse. So they said, well, you know, why don't you sit out for a while? And by halftime, he was feeling better. At that point, they were ahead 31-10, and they said, you know what, let's ride with these other guys and have you come back next week. So I expect him to be, you know, to get the full 100% Josh Adams on Saturday night against Miami.
Well, that was a good move by Coach Kelly. Someone down in Tennessee probably wouldn't have done that. We've heard that story. But when it comes to game time, what does the Irish have to do on defense to stop Miami this week?
Well, when you look at when Miami has struggled, it's when their running game has struggled. And North Carolina, surprisingly, I saw them earlier in the year, did a great job with that. And then Malik Rozier, their first-year starting quarterback who's been really good in the clutch, he gets in those third and longs, and he's not quite as good. He will throw balls up for grabs, get picked off every once in a while, and his percentage goes way down. And I think that's kind of the formula, is dealing with their running game first and then dealing with Rozier and trying to get him to be in third and longs. But they've got some really good receivers. Their offensive line is much better than it was last year. So they're a handful.
And now when Notre Dame has the ball, what do they have to do to make sure that gaudy, that horribly gaudy turnover chain does not come out?
Well, fortunately for Notre Dame, they're among the leaders in turnover margin this year. I think Miami is fourth and Notre Dame is fifth. So they both hang on to the ball very well, and they both turn you over. Notre Dame actually is, without the turnover chain, has forced 19 turnovers, and they have a 108-10 advantage in points off turnovers with their opponent. So they've been very good with that, too. But from Notre Dame's standpoint, they just have to keep playing like that. You know, Brandon Wimbush has two interceptions. Notre Dame's quarterback, that's the fewest by anyone in the country that's thrown 200 passes or more. Their running backs have not fumbled since the 2015 season, or they haven't lost a fumble since the 2015 season. So do that. But the offensive line, Notre Dame's offensive line, has to be the dominant position group in this game for Notre Dame to win. And that's what they've been ever since their loss to Georgia. And if they're the dominant group, then they're going to be able to throw deep when they need to. They're going to be able to run the ball when they need to. They're going to be able to control the clock and play keep away from Miami's offense.
Well, Eric Hansen with the South Bend Tribune, thank you for joining us this morning on the University of Fish. I know we'll be talking to you again later this season because the Irish are playing really well this year, and not a lot of people expected that.
Yeah, I think they've been definitely the surprise team, and we'll see if they can keep it going.
Well, thank you, Eric. Have a great day.
Take care.
Now, when we come back, we're going to go straight to Fish's Picks right here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300. I am the professor.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. It is that time of the week. It's time for Fish's Picks. And we're joined now by Tyler Dara. Tyler, if you don't know who he is the program director at Fox Sports Joplin, Missouri. Yes, Joplin, Missouri, right there. You know, not far from Oklahoma, not far from Arkansas, and really not far from Kansas. Tyler, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thank you very much for having me. And like you said, basically about as close to all three states as you can get without living in all three of them down here in Joplin, that's for sure. Real easy to go over to Oklahoma, real easy to come to Kansas, and real easy to go down to Rogers, too, if you want to go down to Arkansas.
If you want to go to Fayetteville, I don't know why you'd want to go there either. But anyway, let's get into this, and I got to say it to first, you know, just like I do every week, this is for entertainment purposes only. Don't get mad at me and have your wife yell at me because you're losing money. I have to deal with mine all by myself, so you should have to do it as well. We're going to get right into it. We're going to start off in the Mountain West. Boise State traveling to Fort Collins, that beautiful new stadium they have at Colorado State. The Broncos or the Rams. Tyler, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, Colorado State coming into this one at 6-4, Boise at 7-2. I don't know. I mean, I think that Boise's had a strong season with Brett Rypien as their quarterback, 1,360 yards, I believe, about 7 touchdowns, but I'm a Butler County Community College grad, and guess who I went to school with? That's Michael Gallup, the number one receiver in all of Division I football, 1,200 yards right now, about 1,200 yards. I think it's like 1,190-something, and 6 touchdowns. And I think that Boise is actually a 6-point favorite. I think I'm going to take Colorado State outright. And I think you almost bet the farm against against Boise State with 6 points.
Well, the last time Colorado State played at home was against Air Force, where Air Force embarrassed them. No one thought that was going to happen, especially the Colorado State fans. I think they rebound nicely and do beat the Broncos, which will keep Air Force's Mountain West, Mountain Division hopes still intact. Speaking of the Air Force Falcons, they have Josh Allen, who a lot of people think is going to be the number one pick. I don't know why they think that. I've seen him against better competition, and he was horrid. I mean, just look at how what he did against Iowa earlier in the season. But the Wyoming Cowboys coming into Falcon Stadium just up the road from the studio. You can hear that game on our sister station, 740 KVOR, pregame starting at 6 and kickoff just after 8:15. So it's going to be a late night football, but the Cowboys or the Falcons, Tyler?
I think you were right about Josh Allen being one of the top picks. I'm not really sure why, but he's got about 12 touchdowns right now. But Aaron Worthman, the quarterback for Air Force, has 13 rushing touchdowns right now. I like Air Force. I think that they're a 3-point favorite. I think I'm riding with the Falcons out of the spring.
We're going to have to be combative here in a second. It's not going to be on this game because I don't think Wyoming's going to be able to stop the run. If there's anything that Air Force does well, it is run the ball. One of the top teams in the nation rushing the ball, Arian Worthman, and touchdown, Tim McVay. They're going to have a good game tonight. You can, like I said, hear that on our sister station, KVOR. Take the Falcons. Now, the other Colorado school, yes, we haven't talked about CU yet. USC, the Trojans, coming in with Sam Darnold. So you got two of the top picks playing in the state this week. The Trojans or the CU Buffs with Steven Montez at quarterback?
I think Sam Darnold is almost a Heisman front runner right now. I like him almost getting close to 3,000 yards on the year already. 22 touchdowns passing. They're a little too strong there at the 11th rank with 8-2. I like USC. I think they're a 13-point favorite, and I think that they'll cover that against Colorado.
Now, if we're talking about covering, I don't think that – I mean, I think I would take Colorado in that. Once again, I have to agree with you, though, except that I don't think Sam Darnold's a Heisman front runner. He's been throwing the ball away way too much. I think CU stays in this game, especially seeing how Arizona stuck around with the Trojans last week. Everybody thinks Arizona's good. If Rich Rod's your coach, you're not going to be that good. So – but you got to take USC straight up at the Folsom Field there in Boulder. Colorado is going to be licking their wounds after this one because the Trojans will win it. Now, when the season first started, I had this game circled as one of the biggest games of the year. Didn't turn out that way. Florida State traveling to Death Valley to take on Clemson, the real Death Valley, Howard's Rock, the SO Club, everything else there in upstate South Carolina, the Tigers or the Noles?
You know, it's kind of funny that you say the real Death Valley. I've actually never seen a game over in South Carolina's Death Valley, but I have seen one down in Baton Rouge at LSU. That was definitely a fun game to watch, so I can't really kind of comment on that, but I think you're right. I think a lot of people thought this was going to be a good one at the beginning of the year, but Florida State has really just kind of limped to a 3-5 season. I think that the defending champs take this one and take it big. Clemson, a 15.5-point favorite. I think it might be a little bit more than that. I'd almost go 3 touchdowns for the Clemson Tigers.
I don't know how LSU can call theirs Death Valley when it sits on flat land. It's not a valley. It is sitting in flat, whereas Clemson's Death Valley is built into the hill and beautiful. You need to make it to Death Valley, Clemson. Trust me, beautiful stadium, great place to watch football. The Clemson Tigers will run and throw all over the Florida State Seminoles. This one won't even be close. Hopefully, for the college football playoff poll, this one will be close because it's our first real look at Wisconsin this year. The Iowa Hawkeyes, fresh off that big win against Ohio State. This one's not going to be in Kinnick Stadium. This one will be in Madison, Wisconsin, where they will all be liquored up. And they're trying to make the drinking age in Wisconsin 19. But anyway, Wisconsin hosting Iowa. Who takes this one?
I think it'll be a good one up in Camp Randall. I think the Hawkeyes coming in off of that huge win at home against Ohio State, where they basically just ran them all the way out the stadium. But keep in mind, although Iowa is 6-3, They're basically 16 points away from being 9-0. So I think that Iowa is the real deal, although they only have do have three losses. I do think Iowa is the real deal. I think Wisconsin hasn't really been tested like they're going to be tested against Nathan Stanley, who's almost up to 2,000 yards on the season, 22 touchdowns for him. I like Iowa to cover the points, especially with Wisconsin being a 12-point favorite. I think Iowa maybe even wins it by 3 points.
So you're taking Iowa straight up?
Straight up, and almost, like I said earlier, bet the farm on the spread there. That is wild. I don't know who's putting that together, but whoever's making that is probably going to lose their job after this week.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that Wisconsin hadn't really beat anybody by 12 points this year. We talked with Mark Emmert from the Des Moines Register just a few minutes ago, and he said with Stanley and Akram Wadley, you got to go with Iowa. He thinks it's going to be a close game. It will be a close game, but I think that the tight ends for Iowa are going to come into play here, and there's not going to be much that Stony Brook and Jonathan Taylor can do. Iowa's defense will shut down Jonathan Taylor, and would be the first time all year he has been shut down, but they haven't played anybody, and so that's why they'll get shut down. Iowa will continue their winning ways in Camp Randall at Wisconsin. Take the Hawkeyes. Now, Georgia, who we haven't seen a whole lot of against good competition, other than people say, well, but they played Notre Dame. Not real sure how good Notre Dame is, because I think USC is overrated. So we got Georgia going into Jordan-Hare to take on the Auburn Tigers. Jarrett Stidham at quarterback, you know, transferred in from Baylor, so we know we can throw the ball around, but he hadn't been doing that real well this year. You got Jake Fromm, the freshman, playing for Georgia, but he does have Sony Michel and Nick Chubb right behind him in the backfield. Bulldogs, Tigers, SEC clash, who you got?
So it will be a good one down in Jordan-Hare. Number one versus number 10. I do like Georgia. I think that they are pretty much the real deal. I think that basically everything other than what you would say is the eye test. They beat Alabama in that. That's why they're number one. I do like them against Auburn. This is a 2-point spread game, which I think the bookmakers are going to expect this one to be very close. I do think it'll be very close. I think that Georgia will cover the two. I think it will be just a 3-point game. But I got the Bulldogs behind Nick Chubb and Jake Fromm plus 3.
Well, as we just heard from Mark Weiser of the Athens Banner-Herald, he's already talking about Alabama and Georgia both going into the SEC championship undefeated and thinking both of them are getting into the playoff as long as it's not a blowout. I don't think this game's going to be pretty close. It is, but I think there's too much running game for Georgia with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Jake Fromm, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over, the Bulldogs will win this one. It will be close there at Jordan-Hare, but Georgia gets another win, and everybody's going to think they are the best thing since sliced bread because they actually beat as our good friend Joel Klatt said, a trumped-up Auburn team, because the SEC is not that good this year. They're really not, but Georgia will win this game. Michigan State, you know, had the great game last week against Penn State, had the horrible game against Northwestern. They're taking on an Ohio State team that just got blown out at Kinnick Field there in Iowa City, but they're at the Shoe. They're taking on Michigan State. Does D'Antoni have what it takes for Michigan State to make it to the Big Ten championship game?
I do not think so. I think that Urban Meyer, a lot like Nick Saban, whenever they get beat by teams, they come back and really just try to put it on the next team that they play. We've seen that a lot down in Alabama. Their rare losses, whenever they come and play the next team, they just come out and just destroy people because I think that they almost get complacent in winning, and they're going to work a lot harder in this game. I think that Ohio State being a 17-point favorite is really big, but I think that Ohio State will win this game handedly. Don't know if it'll be by 17, but it would not surprise me if it is, and it would not surprise me if the Spartans get boat raced in the Shoe.
Now, we have agreed on every game so far. I don't know why, I don't know how, but we have agreed on every game so far, and damn it, we're going to do it again, because Ohio State now pretty much only playing for the Big Ten championship, and they're hoping they're going, hey, we beat Wisconsin. Wisconsin was undefeated. We should make it to the playoff. They're not going to send a two-loss Ohio State team back to the playoffs. Not going to happen, but Ohio State will beat Michigan State, and Ohio State still has to worry about Michigan because they found themselves a quarterback in the freshman Peters. So we'll have to see what that happens in a couple weeks in that game, but Ohio State will win at the Shoe over Sparty. Now we've got what a lot of people, including the AP poll and coaches poll, think is the best team in the nation. They have played nobody, and I don't know if you can qualify Mississippi State as somebody, even though Nick Fitzgerald is playing great. The Crimson Tide going into Stark Vegas to take on the Mississippi State Bulldogs. How do you see it?
Well, like you said, Nick Fitzgerald has been unbelievable. He's got 13 passing touchdowns, 12 rushing touchdowns this year. Really is played very strong, just kind of not behind the kind of team and coach that they really need in order to win a bunch of ball games. They've been very good, but I just think that Alabama, although, like you said, they really haven't played anybody, a lot of people think that they have for some reason. I mean, it's hard to pick against the Tide, although I would love to. It's hard to pick against them in this game, especially even down in Starkville.
Okay, so you're taking the Crimson Tide. As much as I hate to say it, I'll make it real easy, and I hate saying this almost as much as I hate saying hook 'em. I'm going to say Roll Tide Roll, because they will get the victory in this one. They still have Auburn coming up in the Iron Bowl, and then whoever makes it. Well, we already know that Georgia is making it on the east side. The West still up in the air because, you know, things, crazy things could happen in the SEC, and as they have all year. We have two games to differ on right now. TCU at Oklahoma. Oklahoma just gave up 1,000 yards plus 10 more against Oklahoma State in Stillwater. TCU has the Big 12's best defense. I don't know what that really means, saying the Big 12's best defense. I guess that means that you don't get 50 scored on you regularly. Yeah. But the Horned Frogs going into Norman to take on the number 5 Sooners. Number 5 versus number 6. Going by rankings, this is the biggest game of the week, but it's not being looked at that nationally because you have Georgia-Auburn. You have the next game we'll be talking about, Notre Dame-Miami. But Horned Frogs, Sooners in Norman at night, who do you like?
Well, it's that old cliche about the unstoppable force and the immovable object, although, like you said, the best defense in the Big 12, not really probably much to be holding yourself on for TCU. But I mean, I'm an Oklahoma fan. I think that Oklahoma has the best offense in the nation behind Baker Mayfield, what I think would be one of the Heisman favorites, if not the winner. The only reason I think that he might not win is because the loss to Iowa State. Okay, I get that. But him and Mark Andrews have just been lighting it up, and Mark Andrews is probably one of my favorite players in the NCAA right now. I think he's probably a ninth-year senior or something like that. It feels like he's been playing there for so long. But the over-under on this one's 61. I think they blow that out of the water, and OU is a 6.5-point favorite. I don't think they cover, but I do think they win against TCU down in Gaylord Memorial.
Now, I have to throw a disclaimer out here. When I asked Tyler to come on and be my guest picker this week, I had no idea he was an Oklahoma fan. So I do apologize to my listeners for that, because my listeners know that I'm an Oklahoma alum. So wow. I, once again, cannot go against you as much as I want to. Well, not in this game I don't want to, because as we were just talking with Brooke Pryor of the Daily Oklahoman, this is a huge game, and they're trying to get the same feeling that they had against Texas Tech in the crowd. This was talking about 2008, the jump around game. They've already got playlists put together for what they should play during this game. It's going to take much more than the fans, but it doesn't take much more than Baker Mayfield. I will not bet against that man as long as he's putting shoulder pads on in the college game. In the pro game, I might bet against him, but I can't do it in the college game. Take the Sooners at home at night. Talking about another night game, this is where game day is. Notre Dame at Miami. Catholics versus convicts. Who do you like?
You said it. I was about to say it too. I knew you were going to be able to take the words right out of my mouth when you went to Catholics versus convicts. But you know, I think a lot of people are riding high on Miami. I think the ACC is a little overrated, especially the division that Miami plays in. Notre Dame, though, they're 2 points away basically from being undefeated. Obviously, losing to Georgia by one. So you think 2 points there, they'd be undefeated. I do like Notre Dame. I grew up in a Catholic household, so I kind of was forced to root for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish when I was a young kid. Then I kind of deferred over to the Oklahoma Sooners later on in life. But I do like Notre Dame in this game. I think Brian Kelly's got them good. I don't think that Miami behind Mark Richt is the real deal, and I think it shows in this game against Notre Dame.
Well, we're going to have some shakeup in the college football playoff poll because Notre Dame will lose this game. As we were talking with Eric Hansen of the South Bend Tribune, he knows that Miami's going to be a tough game for them. I think Josh Adams gets held to 120 yards, which would be a good thing for Miami. I think they get enough done on offense for Miami because that defense is a ball-hawking defense. The Hurricane will win this at home, and then they'll get blown out by Clemson in the ACC championship game, so we'll get rid of them in the college football playoff poll as well. And I'm not just picking Miami so we would have one that we differed on. I got to tell you, I had already picked Miami in this game, so it's not a big deal there. But Tyler, Dara, thank you for joining us. Fox Sports, Joplin, Missouri. Look forward to having you again on the University of Fish.
Yeah, no problem, Tim. I really appreciate it. And Boomer Sooner.
Thank you. I love hearing that. That's going to wrap up the University of Fish for this week. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300. Class dismissed.